Hi, I'm Jim Cathcart. The purpose of selling is building profitable business friendships. There are eight areas of skill, eight competencies that you find in all top sales producers. The sales competency, now, unlike a skill, a competency is a category of skill. A skill might be asking good questions. A competency might be connecting with people and understanding their needs. So the skills fall within the overall umbrella of the competency. Let me tell you what the eight sales competencies are so that you get a sense of the overall sales process. It follows the sales cycle quite logically. The first set of competencies are preparation competency, being ready to do a good job. Second, targeting, finding the right people, going after the right people in the right way. Third set, connecting with people, both emotionally and intellectually, so that they trust you. The fourth competency is assessing, understanding, and connecting with them on a needs level. In other words, assessing what they need and what they want. The fifth competency is solving their problem. That's where you make your sales presentation. That's where you present your ideas. You show them how you have solutions for what it is they're desiring. The sixth competency is called committing, and that's where you get commitment to purchase. It's not closing anything. It's making commitment. The seventh competency is assuring that the customer is satisfied and stays satisfied. And the eighth and final competency is kind of like an end cap for the other competency. The first one was preparation, which is preparing for sales and preparing yourself. The eighth competency is managing sales and managing yourself. So when you're strong in one competency and not strong in another, it's predictable what problems you'll encounter. It is. It's absolutely predictable. For example, if I'm not particularly strong at preparation, but I'm really strong at targeting the right people, then when I get out there and I connect with the right people, I'll probably do it in the wrong way because I wasn't prepared. On the other hand, if I'm well prepared, but I'm targeting the wrong people, then I'm really smooth and really good with people who will never buy. See what I'm talking about? So we can take each of those competencies and the connection between them, and you can figure out pretty quickly where your sales needs are for improving your skills, improving your abilities to be a more effective, more successful salesperson. And you can identify which activities would be specific to that area to make you better at selling. So let's look at the eight again. We're talking about preparation, targeting the right people. What if I'm good at targeting but not good at connecting? Then that means I'm definitely calling on the right people. I'm working the right markets. I'm going to the right office in an organization or the right person. But I'm not building trust with them because I don't connect in the appropriate way. Okay, move forward one. What if I'm good at connecting, or you're good at connecting with people, but not as good at assessing their needs? So if you're good at connecting with people, they trust you, they feel good about you, but you're not particularly skilled at really assessing what their needs and wants are, then going forward from there, what you're going to have is a good relationship built on incomplete information. See the problem? When it comes time to make the prescription and then finally the sale, you're going to end up with difficulty because even though you had a good connection, you didn't assess the needs well enough. So I hope what you're seeing here is that there's a continual flow. There's a logic. There's a pattern to this. So if you look at assessing the needs, and let's say I'm assessing the need, but I'm not particularly good at solving their problem, not good at telling about my products and about how those products would fit those needs. See, as you look at this list, and you see that that's where the disconnect is, good at assessing, not good at solving the problem, then what the person needs to work on is telling their story in a better way, presenting their product in a more compelling fashion, showing directly how what they have as a solution fits the needs that this person is dreaming about or hoping for or wishing for. Okay? So here we are in the list. We're looking at preparation, targeting, connecting, assessing, solving. The next one, committing to the sale. If I'm good at solving your problem, presenting my solutions, telling you the story, getting you excited about buying my product or service or signing up for my system or process. Okay? If I'm good at that, but I'm not good at getting commitment, not good at asking for the order in a way that makes you want to buy, then I have a lot of very interested products or prospects who are thinking about it. I end up going home at the end of the day, and someone says, "How was your selling day?" "Oh, man, it was great. I had 5 sales calls today. Every one of them, I got people that were absolutely sold on buying." "How many sales did you make?" "Well, none yet. I mean, they're thinking it through as to how they want to buy, but boy, they want to buy." "You mean you didn't ask for the order?" "Well, I kind of asked, but it just wasn't the right time to." You see what I'm talking about? When you or I encounter somebody with that kind of a pattern in what they're telling you about their sales, that person's got a problem with getting commitment to buy. So they need to work on how they ask for the order. They need to work on the commitment competency, which involves a whole bunch of skills that we'll go into in just a moment. And then we move forward to the 7th competency, which is assuring. Assuring satisfaction. See, if I'm good at getting commitment, but I'm not good at gaining a satisfied customer by assuring that the follow-through took place and everything happened the way they were hoping it would happen, then I end up with people who are canceling their sales or backing out. They're saying, "Oh, never mind," or sending it back, or they're saying, "No, I don't want to sign up anymore. I'm out of here." And it's all because of my follow-through. Okay? So I can work on that, and everything about my sales success gets better. So here's the final one. The difference between assuring satisfaction and managing sales and managing yourself. If I'm good at assuring satisfaction, man, I've made the sales. I've got the customers. They're happy campers. Everything's lovely. God's in His heaven. All's right with the world. However, if I'm not good at managing me, I have trouble keeping myself on a time schedule. I have trouble keeping my resources handy where I can use them and use them well. I have trouble keeping myself learning and growing and staying on the cutting edge of what's going on. See, if I'm not good at managing me, getting myself to do what needs to be done, when it needs to be done, whether I feel like it or not, and still doing it well, if I'm not good at that part of selling, all the rest of it can fall apart and right on top of me. So when you're strong in one and not another, you encounter, as I said, predictable sales problems, and each of these can be resolved by addressing not just generic sales training, but a focused intervention in getting yourself more able to sell in one little specific skill of selling. We've heard over the years, well, this person's a natural salesperson, this person's a learned salesperson, a competent as opposed to a natural. Well, yeah, that's true on some levels, but not in every aspect of selling. Because if you look at 8 competencies, and within them, myriad skills, certainly 32, and I'll show you how that comes apart in just a second. But 32 separate skills in the whole context of selling efficiency and effectiveness? How could anybody be a born salesperson for all of those skills? All of us are good at some of those and not as good at others. And where we're really good at it, we ought to cultivate that. And as Peter Drucker used to say, you develop the strengths and you make the weaknesses irrelevant. Exactly. Work on your strengths and make your weaknesses irrelevant. And in the areas where we're not particularly strong, gather the resources, make connections with other people, find helpers, find tools, find information to fill that gap so that you still succeed in selling. Now, let's move forward. What we're looking at is taking each competency and breaking it into its component parts. For example, preparation, so that you know how to think about this, has 2 sides of it. Sales preparation, that deals with things, and self-preparation deals with you, of course. In sales preparation, there's external sales preparation and there's internal. External is knowing about the marketplace, knowing about your competition, knowing about the customers and the market itself. Internal is knowing your company, knowing your products, knowing your team, knowing who's going to do the follow-through, knowing the systems and processes and standards and policies and pricing structures and all of that sort of stuff. And you think, geez, feels like work. Well, it is work, but it's essential work that all of us have to do at one time or another. But the happy news is we don't have to always do it all the time. We have to do it occasionally so that we're never deficient in that area. Self-preparation, mental and physical. Physical, get your act together. Get yourself in good shape. Stay healthy. Look good. Be prepared. Have the tools with you you need to sell. Mental, get yourself in the right selling frame of mind. Be thinking about how you can serve your customer, not how you can fill your pocketbook. Be thinking about the customer as an asset that you want to cultivate for a long period of time. You want all the future sales that come from them, and you want them coming to you because you are this person's business friend. In targeting, there are two sides to that one. As a matter of fact, for each of the competencies, you can kind of divide it into yin and yang. The two sides of it in targeting are the people, targeting the right people, and the approaches to those people. So when you look at people, for example, there are groups and there are individuals. So I want to make sure I'm going after the right markets for what it is I have to offer. I want to go after the right groups, the right companies within it, the right marketplace. And I want to go after the right individuals within that marketplace. So if I'm calling on a sales clerk when I ought to be calling on the executive suite, I'm probably not making as many sales as I could make, or maybe I'm not making any at all. If I'm calling on in the executive suite when I ought to be calling on people at the front line, likewise, I run into a problem. So groups and individuals, that's one aspect of targeting. The other aspect of targeting is the approach, the strategies, and the tactics. Now, some people use those words interchangeably. I see a difference. A strategy is a general approach that I'm taking to that marketplace. Like, I'm going to surround them with information about our company. I'm going to show up in all of their publications. I'm going to just bombard them with news about us. Then my tactics will be I'll call on this company first, and then this one, and then this one, and I'll use the reputation of having done business with those three to build credibility with all these others. So the tactic is the specific. The strategy is the general. That's targeting. Moving forward, connecting is the next competency. See, when I try to sell to someone, I need to connect with their head. I need them to understand and appreciate the fact that I know my stuff. I'm a credible source. I need them to believe me and trust my information. I need it to make sense, to be logical. But at the same time, I need to connect with their heart. I need to connect with them in such a way that they feel good about the idea of doing business with me. So let's break those down. The head, connecting with the head, involves two things: credibility, behaving in a way that you're credible with them. And the other side of this, of connecting, is activity. You've got to be making enough calls to generate the sales. You've got to be out there. If you're going to be credible, you've got to be seen. You've got to be visible. You've got to be doing things. In connecting with the heart, two sides. The relationship, in other words, the process I use in communicating with people. And if the way I relate to people is awkward, I never get the opportunity to build trust with them. Because trust is not the plant, trust is the fruit. You don't grow fruit, you grow the plant that itself grows the fruit. You understand what I mean? See, if I cultivate a relationship with you, trust will emerge sooner or later. But I can't just go directly to work on the trust part of it. So the relationship process is one part of connecting with the heart, knowing how to deal with differences in personality and so forth, and then building trust, listening, caring, showing that I care, following through. Now, next competency is assessing. That means assessing what this person needs and what this person wants. Two sides of that, needs and wants. Now, a lot of times we make assumptions. We make assumptions about what somebody needs. Hey, I know my business. I've been in a situation like this. I've seen people like you. I know what you need. Yeah, but do you know what I want? Let me tell you a story. Years ago, I was in Oklahoma. I went to a Rotary meeting. And at this Rotary meeting, a man was speaking from one of the local oil companies. And he was one of the developers, the drillers, that went out and found new oil properties and bought up drilling rights so that they could explore. And he said, we were in this one area, and we had drilled pretty much around the full area, but there was sort of a central location where we needed drilling rights. and we didn't have them yet. And the reason we didn't have them is there was an old tumble-down shack and a big chicken wire fence around a farm there. And the old guy who owned the farm was one of these just dirt poor people. He had an old pickup truck from 30 years ago that was up on blocks and mostly covered with rust. His house was tumbling down around his ears. He had a chicken coop here and a bunch of dogs in the yard, but it was pretty clear this guy didn't have any money. So the old people went out to him, and they said, "Sir, we'd like to make you a wealthy man. We want to drill under your property, and we don't even have to be on your property. What we will do is we'll drill at an angle so that you'll never see our oil rigs or our transportation and all that on your property itself. So if you'll just sign this, we will bring you," I don't remember how many thousands of dollars it was, but it was a lot of money, especially to a guy as poor as this one. He said, "Nope." And they said, "Well, sir, is it not enough?" You know, and they offered him more. He said, "Nope, not doing it." He said, "I know how these things work, and you're not pulling the wool over on me." They said, "Sir, we're offering you a lot of money with no effort. All you've got to do is sign this, and it happens automatically. You'll be a rich man." He said, "I know how you guys work, and I'm not going to let it happen to me." So they tried. You know, several people called on him to the point, finally, he said, "Don't come around here again." So this man that was giving the speech to the Rotary group that day, he said, "Let me go out and talk to him." And they said, don't drive a company truck." He said, "No, I just want to go meet the guy." So he drove out there in his private car, and he went over, and he saw the man, and he waved to him across the street. "How you doing?" "Oh, pretty good." He said, "I understand they're doing a lot of drilling out here." He said, "Yeah, they came and they called on me." "Really? What happened?" "Oh, they came around here throwing a bunch of money, a bunch of numbers around." He said, "But I know how this stuff works. They were trying to trick me. They were trying to get a bargain." He said, "Really? Really? That's interesting. How do you know that?" He said, "Because my brother has property two counties over. Oil company came around, made him an offer, and he not only got money, he got a brand new pickup truck." This guy said, "Thank you, sir. Have a nice day." Hopped in his car, went back to the office. He said, "Guys, I want you to find out who this guy's brother is. Find out what kind of pickup truck he got and what kind of deal he got." They found out. Someone went back out, called on the farmer, said, "Sir, we have a beautiful new pickup truck here that's about twice the size and all the features more than your brother has. And we have an offer for you that's better than the offer your brother got. Wonder if you'd be interested in talking to us again." He signed up. Now, all of these people prior to the guy who was given that speech had gone out there to assess the needs, but nobody was assessing the wants. All of them had gone out there and analyzed the situation, but nobody was analyzing the person. When they found out that his need and his want were different, his want was to outdistance his brother, to make a better deal than Bubba did. When they found that out, instantly they solved the problem. See, we need to remember that. That's a lesson I think all of us can learn from. In assessing needs, you got probing and analyzing. In assessing wants, you've got understanding the person and empathizing with the person. When you do that, the tension goes down. Trust goes up. You're able to solve the problem. When you get into the solving, you know, in that competency, there are two types of problems to solve. Main problem, obvious one, and the perceived problem. Because maybe a person thinks the main problem is the lack of money. And in fact, their main problem is not a lack of money, but a lack of or inappropriate use of their resources. The money is in the wrong places or the wrong forms. So here's the way to break that down. In the solving competency, you have presenting and showing relevance. Okay? Presenting your ideas in a way that's compelling and makes people want to listen to you and understand. And then showing relevance is another set of skills, and that's how you take what you present and make it personal to them, make it meaningful to their situation. Then on the other side of solving, you have personalizing, meaning personalizing to the individual, not just the perceived need, and involving. If we learn how to involve other people in the dialogue, then when we reach a solution, we didn't just come to that conclusion. They came to that conclusion. They co-created the solution. They collaborated with us. So that moves us to the next competency. which is getting commitment, committing to the sale, to the purchase. The two sides of committing are committing to the solution. Yes, that solves my problem. Yes, that's an opportunity I'm excited about. Yes, that's what I want to do. And getting them to commit to the action. Not only, yes, is that the solution, but yes, I think I'll take it. A lot of times we get a commitment to the solution, but not a commitment to the action. Okay, so break those down. Commitment to the solution comes from summarizing and negotiating. Summarizing the benefits that you've talked with them about, all the features, all the things that lead to the dream that they want to achieve or the problem they want to solve, the solution outcome that they're looking for, and then negotiating with them the differences over the things that don't quite perfectly fit what they were hoping for. And then getting commitment to the action is about asking for the order, and at the same time, it's about confirming the purchase, confirming that it did in fact take place. When they say yes, then that means that we're saying to them, okay, here's what's going to happen next. Here's what we've done. This is what we've accomplished with it. And this is how you can see this unfold. Part of that is letting people know who they're going to hear from next, who they're going to see next, what's going to happen once you walk out the door or hang up the phone. So that's the solving, the solution, and commitment competency, back to back. Now then we go to assuring satisfaction. In assuring satisfaction, you've got two sides to it. Satisfied now, satisfied ongoing. In other words, satisfied customer and a loyal, continuing satisfaction. All right? To get a satisfied customer, one thing to do is review, as you did in the previous competency, what did they buy, what's happening next, how's this going to work, how's it going to unfold? Okay? Once again, recapping all the benefits. And then the second part of that is the skills around follow-through, making sure they get what they thought they were going to get. Then when you go into building loyalty, there are two things you need to master. One of those is up-serving, not upselling, up-serving. In other words, increasing their satisfaction with the purchase they made by doing something extra, by showing up, following up personally, by taking a little extra time to be careful to make sure it all absolutely worked for them, by listening after the sale for any residual tension or anxiety they might be having, or going and talking with another person on their behalf to help that person buy into the purchase that they had just made. And then the other side of it is recovery. The reason I bring that up is a lot of times in a delivery process after a sale, problems are encountered. Something's out of stock, or something came in a little bit late, or the people installing it, or the first person they encountered in the next phase of being involved with whatever it is they purchased didn't quite give it the flavor that you gave it. So recovery is about being able to bounce back from a problem and retain the commitment of the customer. And there's several skills with that. The final competency, the eighth competency, is managing. Managing sales and, of course, managing yourself. In managing sales, two sides of it, the things and the data, the resources and the information. So you've got lots of resources available to you. And a lot of times when I go into organizations to give a speech or do a training session for their convention, for example, I find that the salespeople don't use the resources they have. They have all kinds of sales tools that just sit on the shelves. So I think we need to use the not only the things, but also the people that are within our network of resources and use them intelligently and constantly remind ourselves of what is there to use. And then use the information and organize the information and manage that information. So, for example, customer relationship management systems so that we know what it is we covered last time we were with that customer. So that we're fresh in our mind on what we said to them last time, what promises were made, what topics were covered, what issues were raised. And then the self-management, two sides to that. Growth, improving yourself, becoming more and more valuable to your company or your customer every day. And motivation, learning to constantly understand more about how to push your own buttons, How to get yourself to get up early. How to get yourself to go the extra mile, to do the extra things. See, when you and I take charge of all of these seemingly complex areas of selling, we find that in reality, it starts becoming very simple. And you might say, hang on. Now, Jim, you just walked me through 8 competencies, 16 subdivisions, 32 total skill sets within all these 8 competencies. I'm on information overload. How on earth could that ever become simple for me? Like this. You don't do them all at once. You only do the one you need next. Learn to become your own sales manager. Learn to become the kind of person who looks at what you're doing, studies, for example, the metrics of sales success. You study your behavioral economics and all that, and you know what's paying off and where the needs are. And you look at the ratios and the relationships between preparation, targeting, connecting, assuring, assessing the needs, you know, all of these. You look at each of those, and as you examine them, you start to see the patterns. And you say, well, I'm good on these. I need to focus on that. And as you start working on that, you find that everything gets better. You ever notice that sometimes when you're working on something, you can work on one little piece of it, and all of a sudden the whole problem goes away? So that's the way it is with selling. If you're working on the one sales skill that's making the biggest difference for you, then all the others tend to take care of themselves. You're going back to Peter Drucker's advice. You develop the strengths and you make the weaknesses irrelevant. His Austrian accent always delivered it quite that way. Now, it's interesting. Peter Drucker, sadly, we lost him recently. He passed away. But during his lifetime, and he lived past age 90, he was arguably one of the most influential, if not the most influential, management and business thought leaders who ever lived. Peter Drucker, about 1990, I think, I was in his audience at a convention, and he said, I no longer teach the management of people at work. And we all thought, what? You're the guru of the management of people at work. He said, I don't think that's the most important thing anymore. He said, what I teach now is the management of oneself. How to manage the way you think about things. How to manage the relationships that you're in where you're not in command. How many of that for you? See, when you and I think about the relationships in which we're not in command, that's about every relationship, right? And when we think about who's with us all the time, every day for our whole career, we are. So if we learn to manage us, and we learn to relate to other people in the most appropriate ways, we will get the sales success that we want. The purpose of selling is building profitable business friendships. I'm Jim Cathcart, and I wish you great sales success.